A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, it's Jess. Before we begin, I want to warn you that this episode will contain discussions about suicide and mental health. Hello, I'm Jess Phillips, and welcome back to Yours Sincerely. Now, most of you might know I'm an MP in Birmingham, but what you might not know is that I've always been a prolific letter writer and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Ben West is an author, public speaker, and mental health campaigner. In 2018, at just 17 years old, Ben's world collapsed around him when he tragically and unexpectedly lost his brother to suicide. The loss of his brother Sam, aged only 15 when he died, propelled Ben into becoming a mental health campaigner. He's committed to making real change around how we approach mental health in our society, schools, and education system. This Mental Health Awareness Week, I'm excited to talk to Ben about the letters he would send to three people who mean the world to him. Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I mean, you're being very polite, Ben, because I made you wait before coming up here.
It's all good.
No, I was raised never to make people wait. I was raised never to be late. My father, like, you know, he would make us leave like 17 hours in advance of something so that we wouldn't be late.
That's okay. So I managed to get some work done. It's all good.
I feel I must start by apologising. So, are you much of a letter writer? How old are you, Ben?
I'm 23.
Okay, no.
So, no,
you're
not really.
You're on the absolute wrong side of the age.
Not really, no.
23?
Yeah.
I wish I was 23, Ben. I had my first baby when I was 23.
Really?
Yeah.
God, that makes me feel...
Crack on.
I know.
No, don't.
I haven't got myself sorted at that point, no.
Don't.
Absolutely
don't
not.
Crack on, don't bother with it. So you've never lived in sort of an era of letter writing, really?
Not really.
Or email?
It's the WhatsApps and Snapchat era, yeah. I'm in. I mean, if I sent like a friend or a family member like an email, that seems like a really significant thing to do. Like, imagine if I'm like, happy birthday, Nan, in an email, that would be like...
You send her a card, though, presumably.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
but also, cards, like, you know, it's a card, isn't it? Everyone's grown up with cards, but with my friends and stuff, I'm in the era of WhatsApp. Facebook's a bit old for me.
I bet you, though, like, if I were to look back at the letters I sent my mates, like, when we went on holiday. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we used to write letters to each other if we just went on holiday.
Yeah.
Because we had no way of communicating with each other. If I look back at them, I probably would have written tops 2,000 words to one friend.
Really?
Whereas you...
Probably, like, three emoji.
But you have probably written... Somebody once told me that if they counted up all my tweets, I'd written, like, War and Peace 5 times. Like, you've probably written considerably more...
Actually. Yeah,
in to
messages.
Your friends, yeah, in
yeah,
messages.
But the thing is, you talk about it, and I'm so jealous of that time because we talk
about
technology now and being able to, I mean, talk to my friends nonstop and, you know, like send messages and there's this like we talk about technology now, it's been like amazing. We can like to be connected across the globe. I love the idea of not being able to talk and being able to send a postcard home. And it's so slow now. Like, I'm so bad at replying to messages and I feel so bad sometimes because I've got messages and I'll go to send like a link to a friend and I'll be like, I've missed 5 major things, like paragraphs of stuff. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. It's so bad. And I'm like, there's so much jealousy when you hear you talk and like
it was
I'd love to be able to do that. It would be so nice.
But it was just
a relief.
Much more it's a relief that you didn't have to respond straight away. But we didn't we didn't know that that was a relief.
It just got lost in the post. Yeah.
But
many people have said things like yeah. that were not true. It's like when you fake that you didn't receive an email or that, it was in my outbox.
Yeah.
Everybody who's ever said that is lying.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a definite, what I'd say is that in modern times, and certainly with regard to some of the stuff that you talk about with regard to mental health, I remember when I was about 16, there was a piece of legislation about Sunday trading. So when I was a kid, nothing was open on a Sunday. Like, maybe, like, the corner shop would be open for a couple of hours, but literally nothing was open on a Sunday. And I absolutely fucking hated it. And I remember really, like, we were discussing it at school and being like, I can't wait. I want to be able... I would give my right arm right now to go back to having nothing open on a Sunday. Like, it doesn't have to be Sunday, you know, your own religion applies. But, like, a day where you did... I mean, honestly, we would have to just walk around the block. That was literally what we did. That was all there was to do. Because the bus would have taken, if you wanted to go anywhere, like go to the park or anything, it would have taken like 2 hours because the bus was so slow. There's like one bus every 2 hours, even in Birmingham, like not like living in the sticks. And you just knock on your mate's door and you just meander around. And that, I think, I feel like that we've lost the slow pace of things.
Slow pace is exactly it. And I think in one conversation we've sort of answered the question that everyone asks when it comes to mental health is, why are we seeing so many people struggling now? And it's like, well, there we go. There's the answer.
Yeah.
You've got your phone pinging all day. You've got everything open all the time. You've got all this stuff and you're constantly doing and constantly having to do things. There's nothing is done slow pace now.
Nothing.
It's why everyone goes on holiday and that's paradise, isn't it? Lying on a beach not doing anything is paradise.
Yeah.
Like, that's what... And that
people still
be,
have their phones
it?
In their hands, though, yeah. don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the idea of doing nothing is what everyone wants to do. And it's like, doesn't that tell you
my
exactly what's going wrong?
My son is grounded currently for being very naughty at school. And he's not allowed his phone, he's not allowed on the computer. He's only allowed to watch TV if me or his dad are also watching it with him. He's 14. And I've seen a genuine uptick in his mood.
Yeah.
Like a genuine uptick in his mood.
Oh, wow. It's when punishment becomes a treatment or something good.
You need to be finding this harder. He does keep trying to negotiate it from 2 weeks down to 1.
Yeah.
He's getting no truck. But it's... I really feel like... I don't know, like, he just converses better. And it's not... He's not particularly addicted to his phone. But just his general demeanour...
Yeah.
Is better.
Yeah.
He cooked loads of biscuits at the weekend as well because there was nothing else to do. And
cooked biscuits.
Yeah, they were delicious. Yeah,
nice.
Amazing peanut butter cookies. Well done,
lovely.
Danny. Delicious. I do think that there is something to be said about that sort of slow-paced, but you've never lived it.
No.
You've basically lived your whole life with some form of MSN Messenger.
Yeah, definitely. And now, like, I've gone for... There's these unplugged things. They're like cabins around London. You can go and stay in them. And I stayed in one. And they're all, like, around the fact that they've got this lockbox and you lock your phone away and you have 3 days to yourself in the middle of nowhere. And it is the most incredible thing.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's like these cabins. It's got a little fire in... They are amazing.
Oh, my God, that
they're
sounds
so lovely. But you go there... And you don't even realise it, but when you come out, you're a completely different person. It's a similar sort of thing. I think we don't realise how entangled we are in the random shit complexity of life. It's not
it's
even
just
important
so
stuff.
Much
it's just like blah,
just
everywhere.
So much like yesterday, because it was the Turkish elections. I was literally like constantly like, I can't speak to anybody. I have to find out what's happening in the Turkish elections. Like... I could just wait till the news is on.
Yeah.
Just watch it.
Yeah.
It's not going to change the outcome if I am watching up-to-date, constant poll changes. Like, what? Didn't help me. Didn't help me. Didn't just made me feel anxious about this Turkish state. Like, I haven't got enough to worry about
exactly.
in my own life without worrying about the Turkish state.
Yeah. It is. Everything's immediate as well.
Yeah, like, I have to know what's going on right now.
Nothing about being a human is immediate.
No.
So it's the only thing we have is what we've manufactured to be immediate. We've grown up as a species having very slow progress and very... And the only immediate thing would be, like, a tiger attack, where it's like, right? That's what we've been
Not
trained.
So much in Birmingham.
No,
South Birmingham, no
tigers. There's
tiger
no tigers.
Attack.
There's a few snakes around there.
Oh, yeah.
Around here, anyway. But there's no, like, threats like that. And so when we talk about mental health and we talk about, like, the fight or flight thing, you know, that's... built into us from an immediate response to an immediate danger. That was what we faced that was immediate back then. We don't have tigers, but we have everything else pinging and pinging. And the same response when a phone pings is exactly the same response as a tiger.
Oh my God,
right?
You're so right.
And
I
you
will
think
like...
if you've got that every day, all day, we're on
for on a Friday, on a Friday, there's a thing if you're a politician, if a journalist rings you on a Friday, that means that you've done something bad that's going to be in the Sunday newspapers, yeah. Right? They always ring you on a Friday to get your comment for the Sunday newspapers. Yeah. Literally, every single time my phone rings on a Friday, I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack.
Yeah,
it is like a tiger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is my tiger.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
We're not built to have that.
It's not a tiger. It's just somebody saying, Jess, you said a stupid thing on Twitter and we're going to write about it. It's not going to kill me.
Yeah. But our body reacts like it is.
Like it's a tiger. Yeah. Literally, my heart, everything, my adrenaline. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God, every time I'm going to think, it's not
a
tiger. It's not a
tiger. It's not a tiger, we're going to find.
It can't hurt me. It's not a tiger.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be fine.
Exactly.
That's going to make me feel better, that tiger thing. So I've asked you to think of three different people you wanted to write letters to. So the first one is to somebody who means the world to you. So who would that be?
That is my mum.
Oh,
I know that's somewhat like a bit of a cliche one, probably, but...
If you love your mum.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying people who don't pick their mums don't love their mums.
Yeah, other people apply. But no, my mum is amazing. So, obviously, you know, with my story, there's a reason I became a mental health campaigner. There's a reason I do this, and it's because in 2018 I lost my brother to suicide. He was 15, I was 17.
That is...
It was...
Unimaginable. That is an actual tiger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is an 100%. Actual tiger.
It was absolutely horrific. It was awful.
15.
It was just a couple months before his GCSE, or a few months before his GCSEs. I was a few months away from A-levels. It was all absolutely awful. He'd been diagnosed with clinical depression, I think it was about 3 months before, September 2017. So he was getting treatment, but it just came out of nowhere. And I'd never spoken to him about it. It was...
Well,
yeah,
you
it
were
was,
seven... I mean, I've got a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. The idea that they would be speaking to each other about this kind of thing is for the... don't retrospectively kick yourself for that, because...
Yeah.
I'm living that at the moment. Yeah. It'd be nice if they just acknowledged the existence of the other one in a polite manner at any point. So don't worry about that.
It's so many people, and I'm now obviously going through this, and I've been working in sort of mental health for 5 years now, and I've met so many people that have gone through the same thing. And for me, one of the worst parts of it was guilt, because especially with suicide,
of course,
there's this idea somewhere that there's a choice involved. And just before...
Also a control.
Yeah,
control.
Right.
That
exactly.
Somebody else had some
and it's
control
not, you know,
over
it's,
it.
It's not the case that that's how it, well, that's not how it works. Mm. But for me, that when you're going through that moment, that's what is at the front of your mind. And anyway, the last thing... So just before Sam went up to... And you know, that was the last time we saw him after dinner. We had an argument. And the last thing I'd ever said to him while he was alive was fuck off as he was leaving. And then the next thing I knew, my mum found him and screamed, and I was doing CPR. And for me, the weeks after that happened, I just remembered those words, fuck off, like that argument. I was like, oh my God, that's why he did it. And my brain just, I was so tired and so just full of, my brain just latched onto this thing. And I genuinely absolutely hated who I was for a long time. Anyway, then I started campaigning because I was desperate to do something good. I was like, look, I'm a shit person. I really hate this. I can't keep food down. I'm just not a functioning person. I was about to do A-levels. I was like, no part of me wants to do revision now. So I was like, I need something good to do. So I started campaigning for mental health, raised a bit of money for charity. I found a lot of support internally by giving back and doing something good and trying to help other people in Sam's position. And the reason I chose my mum, someone I love, not the fact that she birthed me and did all that mad stuff that they can do, which is
it's
crazy.
Mad.
Yeah, it is absolutely
basically
mad.
Split in two.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
On your behalf. Yeah.
Thanks, mum. Apart from that, is she lost her son, and she is one of the most inspiring people I've ever met. I can't
imagine.
She was his only source of support, really, for a long time. He wouldn't talk to anyone other than my mum. She took all of that on board. She was caring for him 24/7. You know, with someone that's suicidal, that never leaves your mind. You're always worried. And then obviously he died, and that was the most horrific way that it could have ended for her. But she's now set up this group. She's done loads. I mean, she's training mental health first aid. She's like awesome in the mental health world. But the thing that stands out for me and is so inspiring is she set up this group called, it's called Cranbrook Carers Group or something. And it's basically a peer support group for people that are caring for people with mental health conditions. So other parents that have suicidal teenagers or people going through anorexia through their child. And they're people that are very easily forgotten. And I just think when she talks about some of the conversations, she gets lots of people come around the house sometimes and they go and sit in the garden with a cup of tea. And I'm like, this is amazing. Mm. This is absolutely extraordinary. You've gone through, you've gone through something so awful. You owe absolutely no one nothing. Mm. You owe nothing to anyone. And you've gone and put so much work into supporting other people in your position, the people that are generally forgotten about in this situation, and giving them some sort of relief. Because no one understands when you're in that situation. When you're caring for someone with a mental health condition, like, let's not dress up. It's exhausting caring for someone with a mental health condition. It's
awful.
Absolutely exhausting. Mm. And there needs to be that relief. So anyway, she is an amazing lady. And she's doing
awesome
things.
What's your mum's name?
Michelle.
Michelle.
She's an absolute legend.
Michelle, my belle. to come out of that alive as a mother, I just think, even just getting your head off a pillow every day and getting up, I'd think she was a Trojan. But, like, then, like, trying to turn that into help for other people. Because I think that one of the things that is difficult about caring and more exposure to mental health and stuff is that the thing that is missing is that it's really, really hard to say, I don't like living alongside somebody with a mental health problem. Like, this has an effect on me. Yeah. Like, this is difficult and I have to challenge my feelings of thinking that it's selfish, like, that it's about me. Yeah. And that is really, 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 like, not enough is done. So I grew up with my brother was a very, very serious drug addict for most of my childhood. And actually the stigma for my parents, it's not like if you've got a kid with cancer, if you've got a kid with severe mental health problems, you don't go into work and be like, oh, sorry, I had to go and get Luke from, like, you know, the hospital again because he'd overdosed. Like, it's not the same as if, like, oh, he's got a treatment and I need to go. Like, you just can't tell anyone, you can't talk to anyone about it. And also the very real emotions, of course you love that person, of course you do, the very real emotions of hating them a bit as well, of hating the situation and being able to say that to somebody who would understand, like, and not judge you for feeling that way will make a world of difference. And if you haven't lived with it, then you wouldn't know.
No.
You wouldn't know to say, sometimes do you want to fucking just, like, run
you
off
need to
and
rage
never,
fight.
Like, basically leave your kids and walk. You can see why people leave their kids, can't you?
No, it's so true. And I think as well, when you're talking about, like, treatment here, there's this real, we've got a massive problem with treatment of mental health.
Well, there isn't any.
Right, there's not any to start with. Even when you do get treatment, I heard a story, so obviously I've got an audience, so anyone that's got a problem with mental health support, I seem to get a message about it, right?
Yeah.
And so I had one girl recently, she had severe social anxiety, and she went through all of the hoops, jumped through all the hoops to get support, and they gave her group therapy, was her option of support. And obviously she went, well, I'm not doing that, right?
Yeah.
And because she turned the support down, she wasn't able to access any NHS support because you're basically so rammed full of people. They're like, well, if you turn it down, we're not going to work with you, blah, blah, blah. And she didn't get any.
People say they're called treatment resistant. And it's like, no, it's not treatment resistant.
You've offered group therapy for a social anxiety disorder.
Yeah, inappropriate
it's
service.
But anyway, so we've got massive problems with treatment in this country, but we've also got problems when you get treatment, it's not right. And actually, when you bring families involved and you have everyone involved, because, you know, I saw an amazing advert that they're doing at the moment around dementia. And it's like, if you're living with dementia, if you're, you know, a relative has dementia, you're living with dementia too.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with mental health conditions. You can't treat a mental health condition by just treating one person's brain.
Yeah.
You treat their entire environment, and that includes their family. And I think it was Dr. Julie, who's amazing, said it. And she said, to fix... if imagine a fish is in a fish tank and the fish isn't healthy, you don't just treat the fish and put it back in the fish tank if the fish tank's dirty.
Fish tank.
You clean the fish tank, right? Otherwise, the same thing's going to keep happening. And in the same way, you can't just expect to keep treating things, putting people back into the same environment. You have to clean their fish tank,
yeah.
right? And that happens by giving their family support, making sure the family understand what's going on, their friends.
You only get that if you pay a shit right? ton of money or have private healthcare. But or even then, it's not perfect.
No, but we see it works. The Maudsley in London that treats... eating disorders, they've been going on for years now. And, you know, anorexia is one of the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. They've never lost a patient because their approach to... And the evidence is there, it works. But anyway, so what she's doing, I think, is absolutely incredible. And for me, personally, like... God, talking about mental health every day is exhausting. It's absolutely
exhausting.
It's
like me and domestic abuse. People are like, did you watch that documentary? I thought, I don't know. I didn't watch any fucking documentary.
It's my day job. Leave me alone.
I am literally just like reading rom-coms in text form. I don't read anything that is remotely about this. I just read books about, like, you know... 30-year-old ad agency women falling in love. Like, I mean,
you need the escape.
I literally am as basic as a person could be in every other regard, because it is exhausting.
It is exhausting, and so I guess for me, like, it's nice to be reminded of what we're actually doing here, and especially when, as soon as you get into this world, you're sort of pulled in all sorts of different directions by different people, and you start to lose sight of where you're actually going and what the impact is. And then you go home and mum's got some woman over that's crying in her shoulder, and you're like, that's what it's about. Like, that's what we're actually trying to do here, and you're reminded about what it is. So she's awesome. Go on, Michelle.
Go on, Michelle. So is that how you sign off your letter? Go on, Michelle.
Go on, Michelle.
What would you want to say to your mum then?
Oh, what, to sign off?
Yeah.
So, where do you even start, to be honest? I mean, I think I'd say something along the lines of, like, the impact you've had on my life is just immeasurable. I mean, not only am I here because of you, but just every single day, it's like, it's the inspiration that gets me out of bed. It really genuinely is. So, go on, Michelle.
It will matter. You're only as happy as your saddest child. And I wish that it was... So my husband, he had a brother who was very, very ill for his whole life and died, sadly. And his parents would beat themselves up as if somehow they'd been responsible for it. And I used to just wish that I could imbue them with the same level of pride in their son who was brilliant and kind and caring and trying to do the best in the world. Like, why don't you... Parents never take the credit for that, like, but they will take all the blame if things go wrong. And it's just like, so you doing well. Take the credit, Michelle. Take the credit. This is a lovely lad.
go on, Michelle.
Go on, Michelle. So the next letter is to somebody who's no longer with us. So who would that be?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's obvious for me it's going to be Sam, right? Mm-hmm. And it ended so abruptly, my relationship with my brother. It was ended an argument, and then the next minute it was, you know, CPR and ambulances, and the my whole world was like, what? No, what, you thought you knew what was going on? Psych, like, this is your new life. And losing someone's suicide, like, every year we get the statistics around suicide released, right? And it's always released with headlines of, like, oh, suicide rate's gone up or down and blah, blah, blah. And it's like 5,900, 6,200 a year. And we talk about suicide now like it's normal, like it's just accepted, like, oh, yeah, it's going to be around 6,000.
It's become a data.
It's just like, oh, it happens. We are... created as animals with one absolute basic philosophy, and that's that you survive no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, that's how animals have done, that's how we've got to here, that's written into the DNA of what creates life, is this idea that you survive no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
We have 6,000 people in the UK alone, 800,000 around the world, choosing, with, you know, air quotes, choosing to not survive. And we seem to just accept that that happens. I just find it completely baffling that we have so many people that are so in so much pain. So, you know, Sam died, and that was absolutely awful. But I never really got to say goodbye. I never really got to say, I never said I loved you. Because like you said, I mean, what teenage boys are doing
is
going to say that. But you know, that bears on your mind. And you...
You know that the fuck off is probably, you know, the fuck off thing is totally authentic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't...
We'll get on to that in my next letter, by the way.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
No, it's not anymore. And I think that's what I would say in my letter to Sam is like, I went through months and months and months of hating you, of hating myself, of hating your family, my friends, the world, the government, the school, the hate of everything.
There's a lot to go around.
Anger, everything. I went through long periods of like extraordinary sadness I would never have thought I could feel. So many emotions, but now I've sort of got through all of that, and we'll go into that in my next letter, but now I've got through all of that, like there's this really sad thing that happened to an extraordinarily talented person, and all he really wanted before he died was for people to understand what he was going through. He actually wrote these posters that he was putting up around school, and I can't remember if I found it before or after he died, but it fell out of his school bag and I picked it up, and he was posting them all around school of like, depression is this and this is what anxiety is, and he was all anonymous. He was doing it after school when everyone had gone home because he didn't want people to know it was him. But he was so desperate for people to understand what he was going through. And so I guess my letter to him is like, what would I want to say now? And I, before he died, I was going to uni to do engineering. I wanted to go into the army. And I'm like, you've completely changed my life. I dropped out of uni. Thanks. I'm not in the army. Thanks.
I mean, genuinely, thanks. Yeah.
And I'm like, you've changed my life. And in that sense, like, that's the most powerful thing. For someone to give you this gift of, this is your purpose. This is what I want to do. This is carrying on what he wanted, which for everyone to understand. Like, that can't be understated. So, you know, I'd want to say to him, thank you so much for teaching me everything you've taught me. Not just about mental health and about how shit suicide is, but actually what to really care about in the world. Mm. Because we can get so bogged down in, like we have started this with the WhatsApps and all this nonsense that we get so bogged down. And actually, there are people out there right now today that won't finish today because they're so sad. There are people in Sam's position, very, very young, 15, you know, up to, down to 13. There are people that are so sad. And I'm like, let's forget about this banal shit that goes on every day and really focus on what matters. So anyway, that I would say thank you for teaching me what's important, because actually...
It's a lesson. Facebook I wish you isn't didn't important. Have, yeah, Facebook definitely isn't important, but it is a lesson that... It's a funny one, isn't it? Because you wish you'd never had to... If you could take it back, you'd like, you know, you'd be in the army now. It's maybe he would have misdirected your life in a different way.
Yeah.
Anyway, such as the strength of his feeling about this. Mm. It's just shit. There's no, I mean, there's no...
It's the word to use. I mean, it's just shit. Yeah.
And trying to dress it up as being anything other than total fucking shit.
Yeah.
It's just horrible.
The relief of being able to say that on a podcast, by the way. Some of you are like, you can't swear. And I'm like, but it is just, I want it.
It's just shit. Whenever anyone dies, I always say to them, I'm really sorry. That's really shit.
Yeah.
Like, that is shit. Like,
it is.
It's just, there's no... Sunlit upland.
No. Because everyone says, oh, you know, it gets better with time. Like, no.
It's always
going to be this shit thing that happens.
It doesn't get better with time. And actually, sometimes if it gets better, that makes you feel worse. Because and then I look forward to the walking into the wall moments. I look forward to moments of grief. I'm like,
because you're like,
yes,
I can.
I loved him.
Because you start questioning your own relationship. Then, if you're not feeling anything, you're like, why am I not feeling anything?
I think what's difficult when, especially when a young person dies, is that they don't progress. That you know they're in that time forever. Like he will be 15.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
And trying to imagine or trying not to imagine what it would have been like. It's just a human condition, isn't it? To paste like a life.
I think that's all grief is, though, isn't it? Everyone says, oh, it gets better with time, but you're like, actually, no, it just gets better with distance because you go through these periods of.
They just go further apart.
Yeah, you're just further away from it. It doesn't make it any less painful because you can take yourself back to that moment and it's awful, but you're just further away from it. And you go through these stages, and this is what I find hard, is like you'll go through the stage quite early on of forgetting how they sound, and then you'll go through the stage of forgetting how they smell.
Yeah.
And it's weird things you wouldn't even think about. And then, like you say, they're stuck in that time when he's 15.
Forgetting how they sound is horrendous, isn't it?
Something you wouldn't even think about. And you have videos and you're like, God, that's how they sound. And you don't even remember it.
My mum has been dead for 12 years and her voice is still on the answer machine at my mum and dad's house. And I am always delighted.
Yeah.
I'm like that. Oh, it's all right. She's there still. And I swear to God, I'm the only person who rings that the landline. So old school. But yeah, to me, it's like a wave where in the beginning, it's like really, really, really close. And then just over time, it doesn't... The ups and downs are as bad.
Yeah.
They're just... further apart, that's all. But that's just grief. But yeah, for your mum.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no, that's, you just never.
No.
You can't, I mean, you can't get over it. There's no getting over it.
No. I think there's
living
like
with
a,
it.
Yeah, there's like a handful of things in life that firstly you remember the date of. Right, because I'm terrible with dates. Remember my birthday, I'm going to remember that day that Sam died.
Yeah.
And there's a handful of moments in life where you describe life as being before or after that happened. And that for me is like the moment of my life that I'd use as a marker of that. And that's how significant it was. It was just absolutely awful. So it's like this either happened before Sam died or after Sam died. Like that was how big it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was not nice. And that it does anger me sometimes how we talk about suicide is just like, oh yeah, that's how it's happening again. But, or when it's like, oh, it's only 5,500 this year.
I know,
amazing.
Yeah. It didn't, like that whole thing about how it didn't go up in the lockdown.
In lockdown?
Yeah, like people
oh
were
my
like,
God.
It's like that, well,
I'm mean, sorry, 162 a week. Like,
I know, yeah.
Something ridiculous.
Like, I was a bit like, I don't know that this is worth a ticker tape parade.
No.
But it was, it's one of the reasons why I started reading out the lists of the women's names who were murdered by their husbands or ex-partners, etc. Was because I got so sick of people just repeating the statistic at me, 2 women were killed a week. I'm like that. Stop just saying it like they're like
it's just normal.
It's like, oh, like I said, it's like a fig leaf. Policymakers can just come up with a fig leaf of like, oh, here's, oh, we all know. And it's just like, okay, well, should we crack on with doing something about that then? How's about some action?
Also, you just set the line in the sand then when it's just like, that's what you need to get lower then. If it's less than that baseline, so if it's suicide, if it's less than 6,000, everyone's like, oh, it's dropped. Amazing, we must have done something well. But I'm like, no, 5,500 whatever people
have died.
Let's not say we've had this massive success, which in lockdown was exactly it. Like, we had this whole thing of like, it didn't increase. It's like, okay.
we're like celebrating.
Yeah.
Loads gets missed. And in women taking their lives by suicide or attempting to take their lives by suicide, the data is well dodgy, and because they're less likely to succeed, there's a consideration that it's less of a problem. And I'm like that, oh my God, just anybody considering taking their own life. Let's just crack on with trying to help them all.
I know. And it's ridiculous, isn't it? You look at these massive figures for self-harm and you're like, oh, but it's a lot of people go, oh, it's only self-harm. And you have this massive translation between, like, I don't know, this is a made-up figure, but it's somewhere around here, like hundreds of thousands of referrals for self-harm to hospital every year. And you're like, oh, that's terrible, but only 5,000 suicides. You're like, that's a tiny amount of percentage. And some people would be like, that's great. And you're like, no. That's hundreds of thousands of people that are literally injuring themselves to get out of feeling what they're feeling. And then 5,000 people actually going to the extreme.
And it's not just those people, like your mother.
Oh, yeah.
The effect on, like, you know, your child wanting to harm themselves will drive you
totally
mad.
It's shocking. I mean,
I'm trying to. And then you enter into this terrible situation of show me your arm, show me your legs, show me. Like, it is just like. And then you're the problem, and parents not having any guidance on the right way to talk about these things. No, like, absolutely. I've spent years working with very, very traumatised people, and so I feel, like, uniquely adapted in this particular yeah. environment. But the vast majority of parents will... you become, like, master and commander and yeah. take control. And actually, the thing that they don't feel is control. Yeah. They need more yeah. control.
Yeah.
And it's... oh, it's yeah. like a horrible situation, a yeah. horrible thing.
I know.
Much more needs to be done.
So much more. But then it's, I mean, we get into that subject, like, it's just across the board with mental health. It's just every single, you have a conversation with someone, I'm in Parliament tomorrow about universities. I've got, universities is one thing, then you've got another, I've got another meeting about schools, and then you've got, like, I was talking to a psychotherapist recently that said, I was asked the question of, like, what's your youngest person that's come to you? Self-harming, it was 3 years old, and it was like, oh, we've got to have conversations about preschools and nurseries being trained in this stuff now. We've got workplaces, we've got just every, you sit there in meetings, you're just like, what's doing well? And obviously there are things that are going well, like we've got amazing yeah. you know, certain projects, amazing charities that are doing awesome,
And pilot based, and there is some brilliant, there's some amazing people working in this field. But until there is a standard, you're always going to get some element of a service not fitting for everybody. Yeah. But actually, let's try and make services for children and then adults who've suffered yeah. a trauma, like a sexual assault. Like, let's talk about their trauma rather than just the outcome yeah. of it. Let's make sure that there is appropriate services for men to be able to talk.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that there's appropriate services for women to be able to talk with just other women. Yeah. Like your group therapy thing. It's just, but instead we've gone, oh, well, this is 6 sessions of this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, God, I understand there's a resource problem, yeah. but the idea that everybody can just get over clinical depression with six sessions. you would never do that with somebody's, like, you know, cancer.
No,
you
would, you'd go, six chemos, and then
six
we'll
chemos,
see how it goes.
That's it. Also, what we don't do, I always say with like domestic abuse versus like diabetes, we don't say to people with diabetes, what we're going to do is we're going to wait till you're absolutely at the point of death, and then we're going to give you the treatment, and we're going to risk assess you, and then 50% of you at the point of death are going to get the treatment. Yeah. Imagine if we did that with diabetes. Oh. Just said, we've only got enough meds for these people not to die of diabetes.
Can I just say the relief of having this conversation, being able to rant? Because, like, every podcast you go on, you're like, oh, mental health, it's good to talk and all this stuff. But actually, let's talk for a second.
Yeah, talking is a fucking fig leaf.
If you speak to people, everyone's talking about it. Yeah. Everyone knows about mental health. Everyone's talking, but you've got people going to their doctor being told, turned away because they haven't got evidence of a suicide attempt. I heard a story the other day.
What are you meant to do? Film it?
It's honestly, if you go to the GP at the moment, some NHS trust, you have to provide evidence that you've had a previous suicide attempt because they won't treat you unless you've already tried to take your own life. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Like, it's like having a patient with a suspected cancer come into your GP surgery and have a golf ball sized tumour. And you'll be going, like, oh, it's a bit
small. Have you had another cancer?
Yeah.
Can you prove you've had another cancer? Because we only worry on the second cancer.
Only if you have history. Or that's a bit small. Come back when it's a bit bigger, right? Because that's what we're doing, really.
Yeah, it's maddening.
Yeah.
You can rant here all day long.
Oh, it is.
So, how would you sign off the letter to your lovely
to
brother,
Sam? I would say, oh, I don't know. I mean, where do you even sign it off? I guess how I'd sign it off is how I wish I'd signed off, you know, his life, which is... thank you for everything you've taught me and I love you, because I do, you know, and you don't say it enough as men and we don't say it enough as kids, but you do have that feeling and I do genuinely have a massive love for all my family, but particularly Sam. So I sign off that.
Sometimes when I love somebody, the way that I tell them I love them is to tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
Just to make you feel better.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, to my husband on a near daily, and my children, near daily basis.
We'll be back for the final letter after a short break.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment.
Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Your final letter is to somebody who's had an effect on your life but wouldn't necessarily know it.
Yeah, and this is a difficult one because she does know she's had an effect on my life. But I don't think to the extent she realised. And it's actually my counsellor. So we talked about this idea that I've had like this massive guilt issue. And I started campaigning. Obviously, once you start campaigning, everyone's like, oh, he's over it. He's fixed, right? So I go on podcasts and people would be like, oh, you know, well done for getting through. You're doing such a good job. And I'd sit there and in my head, I'm like, you have no idea. Like, or they'll ask me, like, how did you cope? And I go through all these, like, oh, I sleep 8 hours a day and all this random, you know, whatever you can think of.
Weird questions. Yeah. Questions you have to answer. Yeah. Have you thought of taking your own life in the last 5 days?
Yeah,
it's just
right.
Sort of like, on a scale of 1 to 5, I'm not sure what the scale is. It's a weird scale.
Yeah. So you go through all these questions. You're like, actually, you know, I'm lying here. And I, this counsellor, Lucy, got in touch and offered me sessions and started picking through it. And it got into the point of the fuck off and having that argument. And I sort of, for the first time ever, I was like, actually, that like is still on my mind. I am convinced that was what he was thinking of when he was dying. I was like, spent a long time absolutely convinced that, you know, that was the reason everything fell apart that night, you know, to the point where like people would come round the house crying and I would genuinely feel such shame because I was like, caused them pain as well. It was awful, it was really awful. But anyway, I sort of went through the whole ramble with her, and then she was the first person that ever really said, you do realize that's normal, right? That's not your fault. And I don't know, it's such a simple thing to say, but it had like just the most profound impact. It was just like, there was this moment I was like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Yeah, and people don't imagine.
Yeah.
If everybody took their life because somebody told them to fuck off, there would be nobody left.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, she was the first person that told me, and I was like, the relief from that.
Rationale is not present with
definitely not. But you still need someone to feed it through. But anyway, so that was one of the things she did for me. But then also, we'd not taught anything about mental health. We have no idea. We've got this thing up here that controls everything we do, but we have no idea what it does and how it works.
Or how to look after it.
Exactly.
No one tells you how to look after it.
Everyone's pulling in all these directions, but no one tells you how to look after it. But so she, for me, she's my counsellor, but she's my teacher. And she's taught me so much just about how my brain works with the world. Mm-hmm. And it's something I think everyone should get. I mean, it's one of my biggest things is education for everyone. Like, counselling's counselling, but actually what you learn in counselling needs to be talked to everyone about, you know, how the brain interacts with the world. The tiger analogy, right?
Yeah,
the fact
that
your smartphone is not a tiger,
better.
Right? Yeah.
It's going to make me feel
all
better.
Of this sort of stuff, but also just really understanding why, you know, road rage is a great example, right? Everyone's lost at a driver for pulling out on them or just like shouting their car and had a, right? Exactly.
I am literally the person I campaign against when I'm behind the wheel.
But there's this massive outburst of energy and outburst of anger. And sometimes you'll have that and then you'll be like, oh, why did I do that? Or why did I say that? And then there's guilt. And you can feel really bad about it and then you sort of pass on. But actually, when you understand it, you're like, I've had a really long day. The driver was a bit of an arsehole.
Yeah.
Pulled out on me, right?
100%. They were all arseholes in my case.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then you start to understand that actually you getting angry at this person or road rage, it might be a relative or something. Everyone's lost it. I lost it at a relative. Mm-hmm. When you understand you've had a long day, they have been genuinely annoying, you can start to understand how your brain's just gone off the edge, right? And I think, you know, the what she's taught me about my brain is just absolutely amazing. And it just gives me so much relief. And I think we've spoken about it at the start. Mm. There's this idea that you have to be busy all the time now. Mm. And like busy means important and all this, like,
know,
which
yeah.
is not
Act
true.
Act busy, yeah.
Right? And we're being pulled in all these directions. And actually, I think we live in a world where if you're not busy, you have this real deep feeling of, what am I doing? I'm not important. I'm not doing enough. So I went through stages of like, I don't know, watching Netflix and being like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm wasting my time. Like, I'm wasting all of this.
Oh, my friend, lean into that.
Right.
I've totally learnt just to literally give in.
Yeah, but also like, it's not unproductive to take time out. And so I had this real bad productivity thing where I was like, you have to be productive all the time. And I don't know whether that's my upbringing and like where I've lived and all this stuff.
My
but
dad
like,
used to say being bored was bourgeois.
Nice.
It's like that. Being
Love
bored
that.
Is for the upper classes, basically. Yeah. Don't tell me you're bored. It's very bourgeois.
Yeah. You have to work. And then all that does is create this idea that if you're not working, oh, I'm missing out on something. I'm not doing something. But anyway, that's just two examples of a whole host of stuff that's just completely changed the way I deal with myself and my internal conversation. Because it always used to be, and I think a lot of people can probably relate to it, it's like if something goes wrong, it's always really attacking. Attacking in your head and your life. It's like, so I think if people's internal conversations were public, we'd be so embarrassed by what we were saying to ourselves, because it's awful, some of the stuff we say.
We're so horrible to ourselves.
Awful.
I mean, if anyone said to me
yeah.
the kind of thing that I say
yeah.
to myself,
you'd be
road
raging.
Well, I would definitely have had them put in prison.
Yeah,
I would
it's
have
awful.
Done them for harassment.
Exactly.
And they would now be serving a lengthy prison yeah. sentence. Like,
absolutely.
You know, I had somebody send me like 160 emails in 1 hour, and that's got nothing on me.
Yeah.
I could, like,
oh,
he's
yeah.
in prison.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
always
nothing on me. I mean, I can do 1,000
yeah.
in an hour of why I'm an awful human
yeah.
being.
All the time.
What is wrong
And
with
everyone
this?
Has that thing, and you're like, until you understand what you're saying and you can actually listen to that voice. And that sounds really like, oh, listen to the voice. But actually, it's like,
yeah,
genuinely,
yeah.
like, listen to it.
It's not like
X-Factor. Yourself.
You've been
go,
on a journey.
Yeah. No, it's not like that at all. Listen to it sometimes. Just go, what on earth am I saying to myself? Just give yourself a break. But it takes a lot to actually get
yeah,
to that point. But anyway, she's been absolutely amazing. And she also did it all for free. She was like, heard my story and she was like, you need counselling. Which I don't know was like offensive or not, but you need counselling. But no. And also, we talk about counselling as like this really bad thing, and like, you know, you spoke
yeah.
about parents being, it's like their fault for having
yeah.
a problem kid. Well, sometimes when you're in counselling, there's this idea that, oh, something,
yeah.
oh dear,
deficient.
That's,
yeah,
yeah. So something's happened. But actually, every week, we joke about it all the time. We have a great relationship. I'd like, it feels like I'm getting a massage of my brain. Like,
yeah.
you come away feeling so light and everything. And I genuinely think everyone should have access to it, because it's
yeah.
so good. But also, everyone thinks counselling is for people that have problems. I guarantee, I absolutely guarantee, if everyone in the country got access to a counsellor they got on with and had 1 hour,
yeah,
no one would sit through that hour in silence. No one would have a quiet hour.
No,
everyone,
everyone's
every
got a thing
single
to say,
person in this world has something to fill that hour
get,
with that they wouldn't want to talk to other people
chest.
About, right?
Yeah.
And we have this opinion of therapy and counselling, like, oh, got something wrong. And you go to these sessions and you have this person where you can talk about anything in the world.
So it's breached
it's
into slightly like in America. Yes. Everybody else, everybody's got a therapist. And so it's breached slightly into like the idea that it's self-indulgent. Yeah. So either one, like you're either like you're broken or you're being self-indulgent. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And both is stupid. It's like saying going for a run is self-indulgent. Yeah. It's not. It's actually quite punishing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But anything to do with our heads, we have to castigate. Yeah. So how would you sign off your letter to your...
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I can't imagine
Don't
any...
Don't leave me.
I can't do it without you. Probably. How would I sign it off? The thing is, the thought of writing an actual letter to her is a bit strange.
I know that you've told her your whole life. And you've got...
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, here's a letter. Probably the same as a see you next week.
That's a good sign. Yeah. See you next week for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Please. Well, Ben, it has been a total pleasure to talk to you and lovely to rant. And I think that we all want everybody to feel better off talking about mental health, but it can't just be a cover up. For actual real services being available to people. We can't rest on the laurels of everybody being better at talking about it.
Definitely.
We have to make it actually better. So
there we go.
I join you in that fight, my friend.
Mic drop.
I know, I felt like Jerry Springer then. God rest him. Be kind. What did he used to say? Look after it. Why can't I think what he used to say? He used to say, like, take care of yourself and each other or something.
Okay,
at the end.
That's a good line to finish on.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you are struggling with your mental health and need support, you can visit www.samaritans.org or call them for free at 116 123 for information, advice and someone to talk to. These will be linked in the show notes. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. But in the meantime, check us out on socials at Jess Phillips Pod. That's also where you can get in touch with the show. If you've enjoyed this conversation and want to hear more, please follow Yours Sincerely and give us a rating on this app or wherever you get your podcasts. Goodbye. This has been an Audio Always original.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.